Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to do, to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of first do no harm. I strongly encourage you to go to my website, ReversingVaccineInducedDiseases.com and DrCarly.com. I have a new webmaster, and so there's going to be a lot of new information added first to ReversingVaccineInducedDiseases.com. And please spread the word about these websites, because the first thing we have to address is our lack of health, and especially when that lack of health involves the brain not being able to critically evaluate and use logic and reasoning in order to figure out what's going on and who's who in the zoo. And if you're so moved, I do appreciate anybody that makes a donation on the PayPal buttons on my website to help me with my work. And also, I do consults for people all over the world to teach them how to reverse their diseases with natural therapies. Of course, I don't practice medicine. I don't give medical advice because the medical mafia went after me for speaking the truth. I also strongly encourage you, if you have a comment or question during the second hour of the show, to call in at 0208-144-3781, or you can Skype the producer of the show at TCT, that stands for These Changing Times, TCT-calls, all lowercase. And very important, callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever's speaking. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the topic of the week. And the topic of the week on today's show is going to be What's Ailing the World? Perception Management via the Holocaust Hoax with my special guest, Deanna Spingola. Deanna is the host of Spingola Speaks on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, Monday through Friday. I don't usually have time to listen to other shows, but I have become a loyal listener to her show because she has done so much amazing homework in terms of who needs to be put out there. And actually, yesterday on my show on Orion, I had a guest I heard on her show, Thomas Sheridan, on talking about psychopaths. So she has an amazing ability to find whose information we need to know. And she also has written a book, The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation, which I have, and it's fantastic. And it's also, and I'm going to ask her the first thing, The Ruling Elite, The Zionist Seizure of the World Power. Is that been released yet, Deanna, or what's the status of that very important book?
It is in the editorial department as we speak, and probably it will be ready for printing hopefully within 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, and because I just want to say, in my opinion, and please, I know you'll let me know when it's available, and I'll spread the word about that, but, you know, these are who we have to focus on now. When we're talking about psychopaths, you know, the Zionists is like the biggest category of the psychopaths. There's no question about that. And, of course, what they've done, to create the hell on earth in which we live is so mind-boggling. And, of course, this hoax called the Holocaust is a very important part of that. And I just want to mention that I had Deanna on my Orion Talk radio show, so I consider that to be part one. And you can go to the lightofdayradioshow.com, click on Dr. Carly Archives, and listen to that show, because I'm not going to go over that same material, because this is a continuation of that. And I also strongly suggest that you listen to the archives of her show from April 18th, where she spoke about the Holocaust Memorial Museum. And that is one thing I definitely think is important to go into more detail about, Deanna, because this is one of the biggest things that they're doing to bring about perception management. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've actually institutionalized it as a religion.
Yes.
And it is being taught in all of the public schools. It is being funded by the government. And I plan to cover those details about how it came to be so institutionalized and how we, the taxpayers, are actually funding our own indoctrination. And it's amazing. It's so subtle and so deceptive and so vile. And if people know what has happened, then they can, you know, perhaps speak out. Well, hopefully speak out. I mean, that's what this is all about, is education and learning what has been done to you and by whom it has been done.
Exactly. And actually, when I was listening to your April 18th show, I took a lot of notes because I do admit the Holocaust is one thing I haven't had time to delve into to a large degree, because I'm dealing with psychopaths and pedophiles and vaccine, disease and genocide and things of that nature. And I'm so grateful to you that you have focused on this and, in my opinion, become one of the most learned persons about this subject, because it is a master template for how they've, managed our perceptions of everything. And, in fact, this whole Holocaust hoax, which was created in order to bring about this charge of anti-Semitism. If you even question, especially the 6 million number of Jews that were allegedly gassed, and we talked about all of that on our last show on Orion, but you're deemed an anti-Semite. So even questioning what they have deemed to be the truth is, labeled like some kind of a hate crime. And this is one of their major weapons that they use against people who are coming out and saying, wait a minute, the numbers don't add up. This is insane.
Correct. And if you look at the deaths in the First World War, for instance, soldiers killed 9,911,000 people in action and wounded 21,219,500 people, citizens. Well, 7,750,000 people were missing in action, for a total of 38,880,500. In the Second World War, there were over 24 million military deaths and 49 million civilian deaths, totaling 73 million deaths, not including the number of wounded or missing. That is 82,911,000 deaths in two world wars, not including the 28,965,500 wounded or missing from World War I. So we are, we're not even talking about the millions of people that the Soviets killed. We are talking about death during two specific time periods. Now, in the First World War, the Jewish people in this country attempted to promote the 6 million death number. The 6 million people were suffering in the war zone, Jews, 6 million Jews were suffering in the war zone, and they started raising millions of dollars to help these people, and they figured out, whoa, this works really swell, because all we have to do is say that 6 million Jews are suffering over in war zone, and all of these rich Jews in America are opening up their wallets and sending us money. Whoa, is this a neat trick or what? And inasmuch as they could not get people to believe that 6 million people, 6 million Jews had perished during World War I, they thought they would run it through World War II and see if they couldn't get some takers of that hoax during World War II. And that is how what they did. And it started when allegedly a few people, I believe there were like three or four people, escaped from Auschwitz during World War II. I believe it was in 1944. They escaped, and they somehow, it was magic because, you know, hardly anybody escapes. But they did, and they got to talk with some of the Jewish agencies in Europe and said, oh, there are gas chambers at Auschwitz, and they're starving us, and all these terrible things are happening. And that is how it started. But basically, the real Holocaust did not get a real get going until about 1961. And this was after the Nuremberg trials. And most of the confessions that came out of Nuremberg actually, they got them through torture. And when you're torturing somebody and starving them, threatening to kill their family, threatening all kinds of things, and whipping them and beating them, and just horrific, horrific torture, they're going to admit to anything that you want them to admit to. And so the biggest, the most important confession out of the Nuremberg trials was from the commandant of Auschwitz. And he was ready to say, yes, we had gas chambers, and we did this and that, and we killed 4 million people. And that is how it really got started. But the actual Allied commanders, commanders from Eisenhower and some of the other commanders that actually opened up the camps, Eisenhower opened up Buchenwald, he didn't say anything about gas chambers. They just found a lot of starving, sick, emaciated people. And immediately Eisenhower brought in a lot of Congress people. He brought in, he actually brought in Billy Wilder to stage some of the, he was a director-producer, to stage some of the photos. He brought in people from the parliament. He brought in a bunch of journalists because he wanted the world to know what Germany had done. Now, it wasn't actually that Germany had starved these people, had given them diseases. It was, in fact, the Allies who had bombed the transportation and the communication lines in Germany during the last 2 months of the war. And so nobody was eating in Germany. Not the citizens, not the soldiers. Nobody was eating in Germany, including the people who were in the camps. And whenever you have no food, a lot of people, lack of sanitation, you're going to have typhus. And that is what you see when you see these piles of bodies of emaciated people. You see people who have died from typhus, not from gas or anything like that, because a person who has died as a result of poison gas turns a very, very bright red. Their skin turns a very, very deep red. And that was not the experience of these dead people. There were also...
If I could, I just want to underline what you just said, because that is so important. That, and you brought this up on our last show, and you brought it up on your show a number of times, is that in these camps, they were basically work camps. They had, areas to exercise. They had all kinds of facilities to basically make it as tolerable as possible. And if anybody thinks that it was terrible for them to be in these camps, well, look what the United States did to the Japanese. I mean, there's no difference there. But you also make a comparison to what Eisenhower was doing in his camps. His camps were actually starving and killing people. And it's really funny how in our history classes, we never heard about that.
That's true. Eisenhower actually set up 200 death camps in Germany. And these were for, they changed the status of every citizen in Germany because of the way that the war ended. They were able to change the status so they could put men, women, and children in these 200 camps. Now, these camps were simply great big encampments, enclosures. They were with barbed wire, with a tower, with, you know, guards holding guns. There were no hospitals, there were no latrines, there were no kitchens, there were no barracks where people could sleep. It was mud. The latrine was a big ditch, and if you fell into it, you drowned. And there was no food, no water. It was despicable. And of course, when people are doing something really, really egregious and horrific themselves, they want to project their crimes onto someone else. And so what Eisenhower did was to focus all the attention on these people who were in, particularly Buchenwald, because that's the one that that all the pictures were taken at. And quite interestingly, there were more prisoners that died each day after the Americans took over at Buchenwald than before. Now, the Cyclone B that we always hear about, that was what they used to poison all of these people. Well, they actually used it the same way that the United States used DDT. It was to kill life. But in Europe, the problem was even greater because you had a lot of unwashed bodies, a lot of travel by train. The entire European continent was at war. And so when you're at war, the soldiers are living in tents and you know, you're not taking a shower every day. And hygiene is the last thing that people think about. Well, the Germans aren't like that. They're very efficient, and they want, inasmuch as these camps were labor camps, they wanted to keep the inmates as healthy as they possibly could. They wanted to keep them well-fed. They wanted to keep them entertained. They even issued a scrip, which is money, which they could spend at the camp commissary. They wanted their people to have everything that they could possibly need or want in order to keep these workers happy. Because most of the Germans from 16 on up were enlisted as soldiers. And so they had this war going on the Western Front, and after the Americans came in on the Eastern Front. So they had all this warfare going on. Well, who's going to make the armament? Who's going to make all of the things that a country needs for warfare? Well, it was not slave labor, but it was labor. But these laborers were paid. And, I mean, they even had a camp orchestra. They had plays. They had art galleries. People could take classes in art and all kinds of things. And so what we hear about these camps is absolutely not true. And most of this comes from about 24 people. There were several books written after, in about the early 1960s, several books were written that were basically propaganda pieces. And it was from these about 24 books that you actually have all these other so-called eyewitnesses. And it's the same kind of situation where I could personally say that I saw the planes go into the buildings on 9/11. I could personally say that. But then if some investigator came to me and said, well, oh, you were in New York and you were right there, and I said, oh, no, I saw it on TV. Well, you know, it was during the 1960s and then the 1970s that we had a lot of things on TV. There was this one serialized program. It was the Holocaust. And so everybody was indoctrinated and brainwashed via television to believe that these horrible things had happened in these camps when, in fact, it was not true. Go ahead.
One thing I wanted to ask you that we didn't get into last time was exactly who was in the camps. Were it just Jewish people? And what was the reason that they, you know, put the Jewish people into the camps to be the worker units for, you know, the war effort? But as far as I know, it wasn't just Jews. But first of all, why were the Jews picked to go into the camps?
The Jews had been at war against the German nations since 1848, when the first socialist revolutions happened in Europe. And so from about 1848 on, and also Frankfurt, Germany was one of the first places, the first city-states that actually emancipated the Jews. And so Germany had been very, very kind to the Jewish peoples. And then all of a sudden, in 1933, in the spring of 1933, world Jewry decided to declare war against Germany. It was an economic war, which can be every bit as devastating and perhaps more so than an actual war. And so it would be the same kind of a situation if, for instance, the Mexican world Mexican representation had all of a sudden said, okay, Mexicans are going to declare war on the United States. So every Mexican in the United States is now at war with the people, with the host country. And so that is what happened in Germany. So German authorities decided, well, gosh, we better round these people up. And ironically, because the Jews had taken over much of the finance in Germany, they'd taken over the newspaper, they had taken over medicine, they had taken over so many aspects of people's lives. And, you know, generally when you do that, you're kind of a parasitical kind of a person. You don't actually work, but you just exploit the labor of other people. And that is what they were doing, had been doing in Germany for a very, very long time. And so it was kind of ironic that now that these Jews had declared war against their host nation, that now they were going to actually have to engage in physical manual labor instead of exploiting the labor of the German people. So it was, and of course there were other people in the labor camps also.
Yes. Can you give like some groups that were also there?
Well, you had a lot of Roma gypsies because gypsies are known to be, they were thieves and robbers and, and so they put them in the camps. And, you know, there were other criminals of the state. And so they thought, well, we need labor. Let's put them in the camps. And there was also instances where there were executions in the camps, because anytime you have a lot of people that are, well, you call them what they are, pathological people, you know, they're psychopathic people, they're going to commit crimes. So, you know, you had a jail in the camp, and you had, you know, there were executions, but there were four actual crimes against other people in the camp. The other thing about the camps is that they did receive regular visits by the International Red Cross, and certainly, if there had been gas chambers, if there had been all of this going on, according to the claims that began to be so prominent during the 1960s and 70s, well, they would have said something. And right. even in the 1930s, when the Jews were making all these claims about how they were being mistreated in Germany and about how there was persecution and everything, there were Jewish organizations in Germany that said, gosh, this isn't happening. And there were other unbiased groups that said, This is just not happening. Now, this was during the same time that there were all of the civil unrest in the South, where there were actually people lynching the blacks. And yet, you know, it was the Americans who were saying, oh, look at what the Germans are doing. Oh, what terrible Germans. And, of course, this was the same kind of rhetoric that they used in World War I. And the whole thing about Germany, the thing that the Anglo group did not, Anglo meaning America and the British Empire, they simply did not want Germany to get ahead, because they viewed Germany as a competitor. And Germany was a different kind of a colonizer. When Germany went into Baghdad, when they were going to do the Baghdad to Berlin Railroad, they were going to enrich the people in their, you know, they didn't consider, you know, Iraq as a colony, but they were going to enrich the people in the Ottoman Empire. It wasn't, they didn't go down there just to exploit the resources, but they wanted to raise the Ottoman Empire up so that they would have good communication, so that they would be able to have commerce with Europe. Whereas the Brits and the Americans, when they went into an area, for instance, when the Americans went into the Philippines, they didn't go in there to raise the country up. They went in there to create a third world country and exploit the resources and zap the labor forces and just plain exploitation. And that is what the Brits did in all of their colonies, excuse me, including India and anywhere else that they happened to land. It was all about exploitation.
And that pattern and practice hasn't changed. I mean, we see what they've done to Iraq and Afghanistan. They're going into Afghanistan to protect the opium while they pretend that that's what they're there to stop, stop the exportation of the opium. There's many soldiers that have come out and talked about this. And, of course, they desolate the entire countries, and then they bring in their contractors to allegedly rebuild it in the way that they want it rebuilt. So nothing changes under the sun. But a very important thing I want to encourage people to do is to actually do some research into the history of the Jews. They have been kicked out of many countries. And if you want to know why, you can learn about this from reading the Talmud. There's an excellent website, sherryschreiner.com, where you can access tidbits from the Talmud. And some of the things that are in the Talmud, this is their holy book. If a Jew is tempted to do evil, he should go to a city where he is not known and do the evil there. Gentile women are designated animals. A Jew need not pay a Gentile to the wages owed him for work. Jews may steal from non-Jews. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff basically where they're saying that they can be pedophiles. A Jew may marry a three-year-old girl. A Jew may have sex with a child as long as the child is less than 9 years old. When a grown-up man has intercourse with a little girl, it is nothing. So their very basis of their Zion, they talk about the Torah, but you have to check into the Talmud, because that's where the really ugliness is found. And this is what these people do. And, in fact, the Jews have been kicked out of many countries. And so I was, laughing on the inside when you're talking about the gypsies being put in the camps because they're thieves. The same applies to the Talmudic Jews, because basically, according to their quote-unquote holy book, that's what they're supposed to do. To rob, cheat, steal, or kill a Gentile is looked upon as an honorable thing.
Right. Well, you know, the Talmud is actually a series of books, and I think probably one of the best historians and one of the best scholars is Michael A. Kaufman, and he wrote a book called Judaism Discovered, a study of anti-biblical religion of racism, self-worship, superstition, and deceit. And it's about 1,100-page encyclopedic book, and it is amazing when you go through that. And, yes, they actually believe that they do not have to to be honest with the people that work for them. And I have personal experience with this because I used to be a representative. I represented several textile companies, and I was a independent contractor, and I had quite a large area. And the basis for being a commission-only rep is that anything that is sold within a particular area, and I had a five-state area, which is a very large. I was on the road all the time, but any order that was called in, any order at all, any of the supplies that came into that five-state area from any of the companies that I represented, even if I didn't place the order, I got paid on it because I'm the one that got the business initially. In other words, I would go into a store and I would sell them, you know, a bunch of fabrics and whatnot, and then that became an account. That became my account. But then if I wasn't, there the next month or something and they needed to reorder, they could reorder, and I would get the commission for it. And, of course, the textile world is monopolized by Jews. And honest to Pete, every single one of the companies, with the exception of one company, cheated me. And, I mean, and not only were they quite practiced in cheating, it wasn't just me, they cheated all their reps.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a very good salesperson, and I had one friend. Well, I had a lot of friends, but one of the friends that owned a great big huge fabric store in the Chicago area would call me whenever he placed an order, and he would say, "I just want you to know that I placed an order with so and so, so that they wouldn't cheat you out of your commission."
Mm-hmm.
But that's how they work.
Right. And how were you able to mount a complaint, or, you know,
happened? I would just call them up and I would say, I understand that you shipped, you know, $10,000 worth of fabric to this company, and I didn't see it on my commission statement. Could you please rectify that? And this one company had decided that they were only going to pay me $500 a month, no matter how much was shipped into the area, no matter what, they were only going to pay me $500 a month. And I represented like seven different companies. And the other thing I noted when I would go to trade shows, I had to do a lot of trade shows, and invariably, and I honestly, all of the men, the Jewish men who came out from New York or who came in from California, most of them were married. And, you know, you knew that they were cheating on their wives. They just cheat. You know, I had one guy come up to me in Kansas City, and he had a booth next to mine. And he said, I'm divorced and yada yada, and would you like to go out to dinner with me tonight? And, you know, I said no. And about 3 to 4 weeks later, I was at a convention, and I saw him. He was with a woman, and we were close to each other, and he said hi, and I said hi, and he said, "Oh, I'd like you to meet my wife." And I said, "Oh, I thought you told me that you were divorced." You know, I was.
I hope you said that in front of the wife.
Oh, I did. Absolutely. Absolutely. He introduced me to his wife, and I said, "Oh, I thought you told me that you were divorced."
Mm-hmm.
I just love to do stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, but this is basically, you know, how it works. And that's what people have to realize, is that in this culture, in my opinion, this is like the epitome of the psychopathic bloodline, is what these people believe in terms of being able to cheat. And according to the Talmud, and I'm going to order that book that you mentioned, Judaism Discovered. I can't wait to check that out.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, but according to their Talmud, you know, they're not supposed to lie, cheat, or steal their own people, but obviously...
obviously they do.
Right.
They do.
And in terms of misogyny, you know, the Jews are at the top of the food chain on that. I mean, that's why they make their women shave their heads and wear wigs. They don't want them to be attractive to others. I've heard tell that, you know, when they have a marriage, they have to have sex through a sheet with a hole in it and present.
Oh, there was a book about that, the hole in the sheet.
Let me just mention, because this cracks me up. They have to present the marital sheet to the mother-in-law, to the mother of the man, to prove that the woman was a virgin, because, of course, as the hymen is ripped apart, you know, you expect there to be a blood stain there. You know, this is the kind of sick thing that these people are involved in.
Yes. Reminds me of that movie, Yentl.
Uh-huh.
Which, it's an interesting movie. But, you know, it's the same thing in Hollywood. You know, where a lot of the producers, a lot of the directors are Jewish. And you know, when you read stories, particularly like from people like Marilyn Monroe, and she says, in fact, there's a website, she tells us what she had to do to get parts. And it's the same way, I found this the same way in the textile industry, is that they would just, you know, they, well, like store owners, big store owners, I mean, they were always trying to exploit every situation. And, you know, it was just awful. I mean, I didn't cave in, but you know, because I have morals and values. But, you know, that's the environment that I was in. And I have to believe that that's the same kind of environment that they kind of produce, you know, in any other industry.
Right. Well, especially in Hollywood. I mean, there's actually a number of people that have come out and revealed, especially what they do to the young people. They're pretty much forced to engage in pedophilia and things of that nature in order to, you know, become stars or sacrifice somebody in their family or whatever the case may be. I mean, this is pure evil. And that's what people have to realize. I mean, these are the people that are controlling the world. And that is why they had to invent this Holocaust so that they could come up with this anti-Semitic propaganda so that they could charge anyone who brings up questions about all of this, the whole scam, and charge them as being anti-Semitic. And I just want to get into now the information you gave out on your show on April 18th, because I was like, whoa, you know, this stuff was another whole layer that I was not aware of. Let me just mention some of the things that you brought up in this show. And this involves Holocaust Remembrance Day. I mean, what a scam, and what its function is. And the fact that there's actually a term for this, Yom HaShoah, which is for Holocaust Remembrance Day, and that 1.9 acres of primo land has been allotted in the District of Criminals by the de facto Sanhedrin to form this United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which is a government agency supported by Congress. It's a national memorial. It's an educational division, and it has a Committee on Conscience, which is a joke, Committee on Conscience regarding genocide. And you stated that on April 24th of 1979 was the first annual commemoration in the National Rotunda to start an annual eight-day observance set aside by Congress for military and other national places to remember the Holocaust victims to bring the money in. Because, as you stated on your show, people started forgetting the Holocaust, and so they had to reactivate this scam because they want people to be, you know, donating to those poor Jewish victims. And you talked about the Department of Remembrance of Victims of the Holocaust, and you listed many of the Jewish Congress people that are on that committee, And the fact that in the Department of Defense, they actually have a guide as to sample ceremonies to be done on all the military bases. So I'll let you comment on that. I have a few other notes. But, I mean, that blew my mind that our Congress has actually gotten involved with this. If people don't believe that we have a Zionist-occupied government, I mean, this should be a real wake-up call. Take it away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is called Yom HaShoah, but in the 1960s, people really didn't, the Jews in this country weren't really paying any attention to the Holocaust. They didn't talk about it in the textbooks. About 21% of the Jews in this country just sort of, you know, they remembered, but that was no big deal. And so they actually had to have a war in order to get things going. And this war was, of course, the Six-Day War. But you brought up the Holocaust Remembrance Day, which began on Wednesday last week, April 18th, and ended Thursday, April 19th. And the taxpayer-funded United States Holocaust Memorial Museum actually would have provided you with a free CD or DVD for planning activities on that day. So maybe if people didn't get their DVD or CD for this year's Holocaust Remembrance Day, maybe they could order it next year. And don't worry, it's free. You don't have to pay for it. Right. Now, following the 1848 establishment of the Israeli state, Jews in America didn't talk about the Holocaust. They didn't raise money for Israel. And then in the late 1950s, there were a few people who were supporting it. And then all of a sudden you had the Adolf Eichmann trial, which began in Jerusalem on April 11th, 1961. And the Israelis indicted him on 15 criminal charges, including crimes against humanity, war crimes, crimes against the Jewish people, and membership in an outlawed organization, meaning the NSDAP. Now, that would be akin to, now this would never happen, but this would be akin to the Iraqis winning the war. Of course, they couldn't win the war because they don't have a military. But this would be akin to the Iraqis winning the war and then having a tribunal set up where they brought in a whole bunch of people, say, from the Republican Party, because the war started under the Republicans.
Yes. George Bush, Cheney, the whole cabal, yes.
Exactly. And then they could charge them with membership in an outlawed organization, the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's you know, how silly this is. And Ben-Gurion, who was the prime minister during the trial, promoted the idea that the majority of the 6 million Holocaust victims would have been heirs and would have relocated to Israel if they had lived. Oh, if only they had lived. Now, keep in mind that there were no more than 3 million Jews in Europe to begin with. That's it, 3 million, if that many. Okay, so how do you explain the 6 million? But
How do they explain it?
They just call you an anti-Semite.
Exactly. Right. I know.
And the anti-Semite claim is actually very, very old. It started in this country, in Congress, in about 1833, when a Jewish man wrote to, I believe it was Henry Clay, and said, I understand that you've referred to us as Jews in Congress. And basically challenged him and said, I want a letter back from you explaining to us why you're referring to us as Jews, because it seems like that's a negative connotation, or words to that effect. And then in 1843 in New York City, 12 Jews got together. They were Freemasons. 12 Freemasons got together to stand for the 12 tribes of Israel. They got together and they created what is called B'nai B'rith. And it is basically they created it to stop criticism of Jewish behavior in the United States. And then they created in 1913 just in time to stop the criticism of the people who foisted the Federal Reserve Act on the American public. And also, they created the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. And also, the other reason is because between 1880 and 1920, you had a lot of criminals enter this country, enter the United States. Criminals, we're talking, you know, because before the immigration laws were very specific, and they didn't want criminals, they didn't want low-life people. And so you could control who was coming into your country. But then you had all these Jewish criminals coming in, and these were people who promoted prostitution, promoted sex trafficking, even early. I mean, it was early. They promoted warfare, they promoted drugs. And so in order to prevent criticism of this group of people and to also blame all of this criminality on the Italians, they created the Anti-Defamation League. And it has worked out quite well for them.
Exactly. And, you know, this is basically such a scam. As a matter of fact, I listen to a lot of television as I'm sitting in my computer and doing my work and things. And just this morning on C-SPAN, their book TV segment, they had some allegedly Muslim woman who was coming on to complain about how the Muslims are the biggest threat to the world because they want to murder anybody that doesn't want to become a Muslim. And she kept talking about Sharia law, Sharia law, Sharia law. They don't talk about the Noahide laws. The Noahide laws, which allegedly, I haven't had a lot of time to research this, but I have been told that our Congress has actually instituted the Zionist Noahide laws. And it's really amazing how that works. You know, basically they have to create a boogeyman, and the boogeyman is never the Mossad, the Zionists, or any of these psychopaths that are doing pretty much all the evil over the world, or creating their proto-psychopaths, as Thomas Sheridan calls them, in order to do their work, you know, selling their souls for cash. So if you could comment on the Noahide laws. When we did our last show, that was something that a lot of people wanted to hear you speak of.
Okay, what is going on? Keep in mind that the Jews basically control the media in this country. We are basically under the control of about five corporations. Now, this began with the Radio Act of 1927 with Herbert Hoover. Pushed that forward. He was the Secretary of Commerce. And at that time, the government took over the regulation and the registration, the licensing of all of the public airways. And remember that the public airways used to be public, but now five corporations own them. Okay, so they can talk about Sharia law. They can, you know, we've got people writing books about Sharia law and about how terrible it is. Well, honestly, people, one would have to be an idiot to really believe this, or brainwashed, or simply ignorant, to believe that given the fact that the Jews control the media, the Jews control the Congress, the Jews control the banks, the Jews control the corporations, the Jews control everything in our country, do we really, really think that these Jews going to allow the Sharia law of the Muslims to take effect in this country? I mean, give me a break. And then you brought up the Noahide laws. Now, on March 5th, 1991, the House of Representatives passed the Noahide laws. On March 7th, 2 days later, the U.S. Senate passed the Noahide laws.
So that is true. That is true, then. You have verified that.
On March 20th, 1991, President George H.W. Bush, a supposed Christian, signed the bill into law. Okay, now, you know, you think, okay, but, you know, how bad could that be? Well, it can be really, really bad. Because according to the Noahide laws, there are seven of them, seven Noahide laws. And they are mentioned in the resolution. And The Lubavitch movement is also mentioned in the House Resolution 104, and basically it's based on the largest branch of Orthodox Hasidic Judaism. Now, when you were talking about newlyweds having sex through the hole in the sheet, you're talking about Hasidic Jews. Now, most of the Jews that I know that I worked with in the textile industry were secular Jews, but they are still, it doesn't matter. They still embrace the same kind of mentality, the same kind of exploitation. So one of the prime goals of is the enforcement of the Noahide laws on all of humanity, starting in the United States. Now, what are these laws? Number one, you have to ask yourself, well, okay, what is the specific language of these seven Noahide laws? And who drafted them? Where were they drafted? Who defines the laws? What does it mean? What's the penalty for violating them? Who's going to administer them? And basically, the laws are, according to the Encyclopedia of Judaism, is civil justice. In other words, the duty to establish a legal system, which they obviously have done with the Supreme Court. The prohibition of blasphemy, which includes the bearing of false witness. The abandonment of idolatry, which means that citizens in this country cannot worship Jesus Christ, because if they do that, they are liable to have their head cut off, okay? The prohibition of incest, including adultery and other sexual offenses, except those, of course, covered in the Talmud. The prohibition of murder. The prohibition against theft. The law against eating flesh, you know, cut from a living animal, or you know, in other words, they're going to have kosher slaughtering. Do you realize that in the United States, and probably in many other countries, that non-Jewish people, Gentiles, pay a tax on just about every single food that they eat? If you look at a jar of mayonnaise, or if you look at the symbols on the bottom, the food industry hires a rabbi to come in and bless, you know, mayonnaise or whatever it is that they're producing in a particular factory. And the industry, whatever industry, whether it's Best Foods or whatever, they have to pay that rabbi to come in and bless the food so that they can put a little stamp or a little symbol, meaning that it's kosher. And so we have, everybody in the country has to pay this increased money for the food that they are consuming, because 2% of the population want kosher food. And yet, everybody has to pay it.
Okay, wait, that brings up a very important point. Is GMO food able to be deemed kosher?
I would imagine so.
Yes.
You know, when you think of all the GMO foods, all the processed foods that those are in, I would assume so. And when you look at Monsanto, and Monsanto was initially a Jewish family.
There you go. That's exactly what I wanted you to say. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a total scam. And this is such an important concept for people to realize. And, in fact, in terms of how they sacrifice the animals, you know, when it's deemed kosher, the way that they, you know, cut their throats and all the things that they do, I mean, basically, you know, it's a bloodlust type of situation. But as long as you have a rabbi there shaking his scepter or whatever he's doing, I don't know. And you gotta wonder, like, what rabbi would want a job like that? Okay, I'm gonna go into the meat farms and I'm gonna stand there as they're sacrificing the animals.
But that's what they do. I mean, that's what
I know.
They do. And with the GMO foods, because the depopulation program that was imposed on the country in 1974 via Kissinger, basically their plan is to eliminate a large percentage of the population. So I don't even know whether regular Jews who actually know what they're doing would eat GMO foods, whether it had a kosher mark on it or not. you have to see, okay, well, you know, who's the GMO foods for? Who are the vaccines for? Who's getting all the mercury in their mouth via fillings? Is it the poor people who don't know any better? Or is it the rich Jews? Probably the poor people.
Well, actually, I think the psychopathic Talmudic Jews are so psychopathic that I think they view their own people. And you brought this out when you're talking about, you know, the Jews at your different functions, and they're, you know, basically promoting themselves as divorced and trying to get some action on the side when they're not divorced. I think that those people view their own people, you know, the poorest, you know, versions of them, as nothing more than cattle also, because if they're going to decrease the population by 90%, they don't want those people to continue breathing either.
They are not opposed to using the poor, the poverty-stricken Jews to do the work. In fact, when the pogroms were going on in Russia, it was the poor who basically went to the Middle East. And although it was pretty well, you know, there were a lot of orange groves and things that the Arabs, the Palestinians had created, but it was the poor people who went down to the area that was not as developed and worked until they died, basically, you know, preparing the land for, you know, further inhabitation by the Jews. But, I mean, it's just all very interesting. Going back to the kosher slaughter, one of the things that really irked the Jews in Germany is that when Hitler came in 1933, he put an end to kosher slaughter. Now, you know, he also put an end to Freemasonry. He made a lot of changes in Germany that really irked the Jewish people, because the Jews have for a couple hundred years used Freemasonry to infiltrated the Freemason lodges at that time. When they got their freedom in Frankfurt, and I believe it was 1809, then they were immediately, they got to go into the Freemasonic lodges, and, you know, they kind of took them over, and they merged them. Freemasonry and the Illuminati merged in about 1776, something like that. But, you know, and it was a deliberate kind of a thing, and so when he came in, he said, okay, we're getting rid of Freemasonry, we're getting rid of kosher slaughter, we are not going to have the Jews in charge of the media, we're not going to have the Jews in charge of education, we're not going to have the Jews in charge of financing, and we're not going to allow the international bankers. And so basically the reason that they went after Germany and basically impose this horrible hoax on them is because Hitler stood up against the international bankers, which, of course, are Jewish.
Well, as a matter of fact, a similar situation can be, you know, intuited from what's happening with the Muslims now, because the Muslims, the one thing I know for sure about the Muslims is they are against usury, and that's what the Zionist bankers are all about. And in my opinion, that's one of the main reasons that they're being targeted. Do you think that's the case?
Oh, I know it is. I mean, before the invasion of Iraq, they did not have a central bank that was run by the Rothschilds. And you can say the same thing about every other country that they've gone into. I think we're down to three, Iran being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this you know, these the American government, we are basically the military force behind Judaism.
Exactly.
And it used to be the press.
As a matter of fact, like I said, I listen to C-SPAN a lot, and Joe Biden, our Zionist vice president, actually appeared on C-SPAN on May 9th, 2009. I have a taped recording of this. You can check it out on C-SPAN yourself. He was appearing before APAC, which is, you know, the Zionist controlled group in the United States, and he actually introduced himself as a Zionist. And, you know, it just boggles my mind that these things are going on and that people are watching this and they don't say to themselves, wait a minute, you're not an American, you're a Zionist? How does that work? And, in fact, we know that, what's her name, Cynthia McKenna, that's the reason she was basically, you know, railroaded out of Congress, because when all the members of Congress were asked to sign an allegiance to Israel, she refused. And so they railroaded her out. That's what people of this country do not realize, that our country is occupied by the Zionists. And if anybody doesn't go along with that program, they will be railroaded. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. In fact, you know, they pretty much, anybody that's a candidate for the presidency, has been okayed, has been vetted by a Jew that's, you know, for instance, Sarah Palin was vetted by Kissinger. All these people are vetted to make certain that they will be obedient to the Jewish agenda. So any candidate, it doesn't matter whether it's the ones that have dropped out, you know, like Santorum or whomever, they have all been vetted. So we have no choice. You know, who's the one that decided which candidates were going to be running to begin with? It certainly wasn't the American people. And the media basically runs the campaign. And of course, you have Dr. Ron Paul, who basically the media has just totally ignored. Now, I'm not saying that I promote Ron Paul or that I believe that he's the answer. In fact, I don't believe that there's an answer. I believe that we're a bunch of people who have learned to idolize the state, which is basically Judaic. We have become a Talmudic country. When you look at the pages and pages and pages of legislation, you can compare that to the Talmud, which is many, many, many volumes of legislation of things that address every aspect of a person's life. What, you know, what to eat, what to wear, what to drink, what to think. And so that's comparable to legislation that is now being, you know, run through Congress. I mean, the Senate doesn't, you know, senators do not read the bills. The House members don't read the bills. Where do these, you know, it's lobbyists that create these bills. These lobbyists that are run by the Zionist interest, by the Jewish interest. And so when you think, well, you know who picked these people? They, you know, the left, the people on the left are run by Marxist Jews, and the people on the right are run by Zionist Jews. So either way, whether you're left-leaning or right-leaning, you're going to get somebody that Israel approves of. And whether, you know, we were all told, you know, Obama's going to make the change. He's coming in and he's going to make all of these changes. Well, changes are, you know, our own perception. When I think of change, it might be something different than what you think of as a change. So when he used that word, that this is going to be a big change, everybody just imagined what they themselves wanted to happen. And, you know, it was a big tactic, a big trick. And so he comes in, and not only does he not stop the wars, he escalates them. He sends more troops in. And you have the same thing with the candidates now, with Mitt Romney, and who will be the Republican candidate. He's nothing but a warmonger. And when he's talking about what it's going to do economically for the country, not a single word about the war. The war is the wars, I should say. Warfare eats up the country morally. It eats up the country economically. It demoralizes the soldiers. It demoralizes their families. It just makes me sick that there's no single solitary word about warfare. And that's killing. That is killing, okay?
Right.
And we're not supposed to have a standing army. You know, nobody's looking at the Constitution anymore, but even the Constitution was designed by people who were deceptive. Okay?
Right. Right. Okay, I'm chomping at the bit here. I have to mention a couple of things. First of all, the Constitution was written by the Freemasons that
exactly
started this country, and it doesn't apply to us in the first place. However, Obama, in his last three executive orders, has pretty much obliterated the Bill of Rights. He's going to take over everything. All they need is a false flag to declare martial law, and he will have control over our bank accounts, our food supply, everything under the sun. And in fact, the Congress is a modern-day Sanhedrin. In terms of Ron Paul, he's a medical mason. The way I look at him is he's a name-gatherer. You know, the people that are more aware, you know, that know about the Federal Reserve and things of that nature, they're more likely to be Ron Paul supporters. So once you donate to him or get on his list, he's going to, you know, supply those names to the powers that be. Because I'm sure he signed the Allegiance to Israel document that was passed around, and that's why he hasn't been railroaded out of Congress. As far as Sarah Palin, it was actually on a mainstream media documentary some time ago. She actually has the Israeli flag in her office. I mean, hello, people. And, of course, she's obviously a psychopath as well. And Mitt Romney, one thing that really amazed me recently, and this was also in the mainstream media, they talked about Mitt Romney has been a buddy of Benjamin Netanyahu for 30 years.
Exactly.
So now we have a Mormon Zionist, and that's what goes to show. I mean, all these people, they pretend that they, whether they're Christian, Mormon, whatever the case may be, in actuality, they're Zionists. And that's what their allegiance is. And as you said, that's the reason that the Sanhedrin has approved them as being puppets for them and to run for whatever office they may run for.
Exactly. And, of course, they're vetted. And with Ron Paul, I mean, you know, he's doing these money bombs and it's giving people hope. But basically, he's asking for a, what is he asking for with the Federal Reserve? He wants an audit of the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve is audited every year because it is a corporation. So it is audited. What he should be asking for is the dismantlement of the Federal Reserve. Meanwhile, he's collecting a lot of money, and, you know, I wouldn't fall for that because you're going to send in your money, and what's he going to do with it? Well, who knows? Now, he is, according to what a very famous lobbyist told me when he was on my radio program, he said that Ron Paul was the only person in Congress who had never accepted a bribe from a lobbyist. Well, you know, that might be true. Jack Abramoff told me that when he was on my radio program. But is it true? I don't know.
Well, even if it is true, I mean, he may do that so that he can use that excuse down the line. But where I realized Ron Paul was a minion, I contacted him a few years ago and told him about my work with vaccinations, and I actually spoke to him on the phone. And basically his response was, keep up the good work type thing. And
sure,
there's actually a YouTube video of him talking about vaccinations, and he does not come out against them. He's another one of these, well, we need to decrease the schedule, people. And my answer to that is, yeah, it's better to shoot your child with a six-shooter than a Uzi. Okay?
Exactly.
So he's a total fraud. That's what let me know he was a total fraud. Because
sure,
as a medical doctor, if he's promoting vaccines, period, that's basically a proof that, you know, he's a fraud. And it's very interesting because Michelle Bachmann, who was running for president, and as soon as she came out against the HPV vaccine, you know, all of the Zionist interests came after her and she was crushed. And isn't it funny how that worked out? Because I had actually gone to a convention in Kansas City, the Constitution Party, a few years ago, and shared with them, actually in 2008, my information about vaccines, and I told them, if you make this part of your plank, you come out and say that vaccinations should never be forced on any person or pet, that this would bring you to the forefront. And that's when I realized, you know, Chuck Baldwin is another minion, because they wouldn't even hear of it. They didn't want anything to do with it. Because, as I always say, if you don't have your health, you have nothing. And if you're going to be inoculated with disease, of course, you're going to get sick. And then Big Pharma comes in. So they're all involved. We have so many distractors and intel psychopaths trying to sway us from right to left, whatever. As you said perfectly, you have your left wing and your right wing. They attract different groups, but it's all the same scam.
Sure. And the people who are promoting Ron Paul are doing it because they hope that somebody will come and save them, but it just doesn't work that way. It's a big distraction. And as far as Michelle Bachmann, she worked on an Israeli kibbutz after she got out of high school. And I refer to her as Michelle Bachmann-Berg.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that, but nothing surprises me. So actually, maybe she sacrificed herself knowingly by saying that against the HPV vaccine so that she could be crushed. Maybe that was her sacrifice for the Zionist, you know.
Or maybe it was to give people would say, oh, let's support her. Look, she's coming out against vaccines. Isn't this wonderful? Oh, what a wonderful person she must be.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, Ron Paul. Oh, look, he's coming out against the Federal Reserve. Oh, let's send him some money. Oh, let's do this. Think of the money they'd collect by saying these things.
It's disgusting, exactly. And that's why I always tell people, you have to take your own actions. It's not just, because people always say, the truth shall set you free. No, acting on the truth will set you free. And that's what people have to do. As a matter of fact, there's this amazing propaganda going out now all over the Internet being put out by this David Wilcox, whatever his name is, character. And he's saying, oh, they're going after the Illuminati, you know, basically, you know, they're taking them down. They're getting ready to take them down. And this is another PSYOPs maneuver. It's like, yeah, people, don't do anything yourselves. Stay on the couch, watch your movies, drink your beer, because the people on the white horses have arrived.
Right.
There's so many layers to this propaganda. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. And, the part that Israel plays, the part that the Holocaust plays, is just amazing. And, you know, we hear that Iran, supposedly, that the leader in Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map or drive the Jews into the sea. Well, this is the same kind of propaganda that they used back in 1967 in order to start a war. And you brought up the term false flag. Well, the one false flag that the Jews or that the Israelis wanted to perpetuate was that they attacked. The Israelis attacked the USS Liberty on June 8, 1967, and they were going to blame it on the Arabs so that America would support Israel, because, you know, the Jews had stopped sending money. You know, nobody was really, you know, it was just there, and they looked at the Israelis differently. But the Six-Day War, became this kind of a redemption thing. Then people begin to see them differently, and yet the American media continued to claim that Israel was on the brink of destruction, and then they planted a perception of a possible new Holocaust, and then they brought out all these pictures about the Holocaust during World War II, and that reinforced the historical claims, and then made people think, oh, look, we've got to support Israel because otherwise they're going to, you know, they're going to slay them, they're going to have gas chambers and stuff. In fact, they even tried to say that some of the people, the Iraqis, the Palestinians, had gas chambers, and the Germans had gone into into Palestine and were creating gas chambers. And so
right.
that's how they connected the gas chambers and the Holocaust to the Six-Day War. And then the Jews that were living in America thought, oh, wow, we better support this, and they became connected to Israel. And so it basically had some economic objectives here. But
it's
the Jews...
It's all psyops, and this is what amazes me. And that's why I talk about vaccinations, the true weapons of mass destruction, causing a genocide upon humanity, and I use that term because basically what they're doing, they're not putting people into camps, they're putting the camps into the people's brains, forcing them to become, you know, basically slave work units that have no comprehension or whatever. And it's really amazing how that kind of genocide is not discussed. And, of course, the pharmaceutical companies that are behind all of this are, in fact, I'm sure, almost all owned by Zionists. And this is just a psyops. And that's why I'm so grateful that you've come on the show to talk about this, so that people can open their eyes to how big this is. And it's really amazing. Mel Gibson, who has been demeaned, you know, when he was arrested for DWI and he started a rant against the Zionist Jews. I don't know what they've done to him, because he was actually in the news again. Apparently he's had some other breakdown where he, you know, went wild on the phone and said all kinds of crazy things.
I think they created that audio. They have the ability to mimic a person that they want to say certain things. Apparently he said some things to his girlfriend, or is this even more recent? But they can take anybody's voice, particularly someone that's so well known, and they can create an audio using that person's voice. And mm-hmm. I do not believe that he really said what they say he said to his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I believe that's framed him.
Because he's in Hollywood, so obviously he knows the rules, yeah.
Sure.
But, yeah, and it's another excuse for them to create this, you know, Jew-hating mentality type thing. And that's what it's all about. The whole anti-Semitic thing is a scam. And... you had mentioned on your show on April 18th about this term. I love this term, Holocaustianity, that it's a new religion. It's very important for people to realize that. And you also talked about how $47 million of the $78 million operating budget of the Holocaust Museum is paid for by the taxpayer. And there's 33... of these Holocaust museums in the United States. In fact, there's one here in North Carolina, and there's been all kinds of articles in the paper about that. And that's what I want people to realize, is that what they're trying to do is keep this whole Holocaust mentality in the minds of the people, so they can think, oh, the poor Jews. That's what it's all about. Forget the Talmud and all the crimes against humanity they admit in their own holy documents. Just
right.
Think of them as being persecuted because why? I mean, what is the excuse? Why would the world persecute the Zionist Jews if they weren't bad guys? Why did they do this? Because they're the chosen people? Because God said they're the chosen people? Are we jealous of them?
No. There's the comment, there would not be so much anti-Semitism if there wasn't so much Semitism. But remember, Jews can bash Israeli policies, but to remain a loyal Jew, one may never question the Holocaust or Germany's alleged involvement in it. Continual reference to Hitler, which is synonymous with the Holocaust, reinforces the belief. Remember what his co-religionists did to David Cole. Now, David Cole went into Auschwitz. He created a film and basically exposed the Holocaust as a hoax. And his own people beat him up, almost beat him to death. And there's so much evidence against the historicity of the Holocaust, and it's readily available. Just like information is readily available about the toxicity of vaccines. If otherwise intelligent people ignore the Holocaust evidence, the evidence against the Holocaust, if otherwise intelligent people ignore the toxicity of vaccine, the toxicity of mercury, you have to question their motive. Honesty about the Holocaust might be a litmus test for other issues. You know, you find the same people, promoting, both things, the Holocaust and, we've got to vaccinate these people so that they have better health. Baloney. There is evidence against both of these.
Right. As a matter of fact, the layers of psyops become self-evident. When we did our other show, I was talking to you about this author, Norman Finkelstein, a Jew who wrote the book The Holocaust Industry, and I found that to be hilarious because he does expose the fact that they've made the Holocaust into an industry. However, he claims his parents were in the Holocaust and they were in the camps and all this other crap. And
right.
So, it's just amazing all the layers that exist to promote this stuff, to confuse people, to make them believe, okay, now we have somebody speaking out against the Holocaust industry, but yet he's stating his parents were in the camps and that, they watched people being gassed and all the rest of it. You have to appreciate the genius of their psychopathy because they've covered their bases in a way that keeps so many people in the dark.
Oh, absolutely. And, you talked about the money that the American taxpayers pay and the number of museums that are here in this country. And, it's a national holiday. Even in the newspaper last week and the week before, there were, people were going to be giving talks in some of the local colleges. And, it's always people who give their personal testimony, their personal witness, which is very influential for students. Students, when they see this, charismatic person talking about what happened to them, children are very empathetic, and they're going to feel sorry for the person that has come in to talk about what happened to their relatives. They're not going to say, well, how did they do that? What was a gas chamber? How was it made? Did it have a big seal around the door? Could they breathe? How come they could do so many? What happened to the ashes? We're talking about a lot of scientific evidence that they cannot prove. All of the basis for their theory is eyewitness testimony. They never produce any scientific evidence that this occurred. In fact, there have been a lot of people who have produced evidence to verify that it, in fact, did not occur.
Exactly. And then what happens to those people, like you were talking about, the individual that actually went into the camp and documented that, this is a red flag. And this is what really disturbs me, is that this information does not get out, although, of course, we're not surprised because, like you said, the media, everything's controlled by these same individuals. But that's why we do shows like this, to encourage people to check things out for themselves.
Right.
Don't believe what we're saying. Check things out for yourself. And I can't wait until your book comes out, Deanna, because I'm sure you have documentation up the wazoo about this, so that people can, ask those hard questions. I picture many people going into these Holocaust remembrances and asking hard questions. And let's see how fast the Secret Service tasers them and removes them from the room. That should be an indication to others as to the fact that, our government is occupied by Zionists. But, we're running out of time so fast. One thing I wanted to cover was the Kol Nidre. And I had sent you a document. It's hilarious, actually. Listeners, you can access this document on slate.com. The title is The Centuries-Long Controversy Over the Yom Kippur's Kol Nidre, the anti-Semites' favorite Jewish prayer. And this is quite hilarious, actually, because this, you know, author, Michael Weiss, obviously a Zionist, who posted this on October 7th, 2008, is basically trying to be an apologetic for the Kol Nidre. And talking about how the fact, and the Kol Nidre, just so all of you know, for observant Jews, the Kol Nidre represents the liturgical kickoff for Yom Kippur. Opening services are named for the prayer, which means all vows. And in this Kol Nidre, they actually state that basically, and I'm quoting from the article, all vows, obligations, oaths, and anathemas, whether called konam, konas, or by any other name, which we may vow or swear or pledge, or whereby we may be bound from this day of atonement until the next, we do repent. May they be deemed absolved, forgiven, annulled, and void, and made of no effect. They shall not bind us, nor have any power over us. The vows shall not be reckoned vows. The obligation shall not be obligatory, nor the oaths be oaths. Now, what segment of society takes an oath? Congress takes an oath to, stand up for the Constitution. Judges, the same thing. Doctors take the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. The list is endless. And what this minion actually says, which is amazing to me, his excuse for basically stating that anybody that, you know, questions the Kol Nidre is an anti-Semite, he says that everything in the prayer refers only to personal vows. Now, as I read, the prayer says all vows. It doesn't say all personal vows. It says all vows.
When a person takes a vow, it becomes personal to them. Now this, the Kol Nidre, which is the prayer that begins Yom Kippur, this year begins at sunset, September 13th, or September 25th, to nightfall, September 26th. And that is when all of these people can basically repent of all vows, and if it's a personal vow, well, you know, it's a personal vow, whether they're a member of Congress or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they wipe it out. It's over. They wipe it out.
Right. So his bull crap about that it's only refers to personal vows, as you said, all vows can be deemed as personal. So this is a total distraction. It's a false flag, whatever you want to call it. This is very personal to me because when I was a doctor, well, I am still a doctor, but, you know, at graduation from medical school, we all raise our right arm and we take the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm and all the other crap. And now all the medical profession does is harm, and it's getting worse every day. And this goes along with the Kol Nidre. And you know, you don't have to be a Jew to, you know, have your oath basically be reversed because it's all a scam to begin with. When I graduated from medical school, our graduation, I went to Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn, and we took our graduation ceremony and raised our right arm and, did the Hippocratic Oath at the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. And when I look back on that now, I'm like, oh, the joke was on us. We were just performing. It was all just a joke. And recently I interviewed B.J. Campbell's wife, Ronnie, on my show last week. And she talked about in her medical graduation, they actually had their graduation at a Masonic temple. That's the next layer. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it's all the same crap. And that's what people have to realize, is that everything has been corrupted. And unfortunately, the people that control the world, the psychopaths that control the world, it's all a big joke to them. That, you know, you take an oath, but in actuality, you're actually taking an oath, especially if you're a Zionist Jew, to not, you know, follow your oath. And what did you think about this article that I sent you? It was a very sad attempt of him trying to apologize for the kol nidre, but what did you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's very easy to get up and say you're sorry about something. I mean, when I had Jack Abramoff on the program, he basically admitted that if he hadn't been caught, he would still be doing what he was doing. And and so, you know, it's very easy. You know, deathbed repentance is extremely easy because, you know, once you're in jail, I mean, you're really sorry. But even after he had been in jail, he said, well, he really didn't feel that he was doing anything wrong. That, you know.
Because he's a Zionist Jew, right?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
But see, now that he was caught, now he had to go through and do some other things and go through what they call teshuva, you know, and go through all this repentance. But he's always been a Jew. He's always been a very faithful Hasidic Jew. And so now, you know, after he'd been in jail for almost 4 years, now he's going to take the role of exposing the government. You know, it's all just a, you know, charade. I mean, when you're really sorry that you've done something, you don't wait to get caught to feel sorry. You stop doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Well, not only that, but you see, any time that any of these minions are prosecuted and put in jail, you know that the actual reason they're being charged with whatever they're being charged with is not the truth. He did something to piss somebody off elsewhere, okay? That's a self-evident fact. An example I give is Elliot Spitzer. You know, they exposed him for having sex with a prostitute and crossing straight lines and all this other stuff. He's never been put in jail. He's never been prosecuted. You know, he resigned as governor, but he's on mainstream media, and he's going to be starting another talk show on mainstream TV soon. But in reality, one of the things that this minion has done, and I take this very personally, is when I charged a judge and went to federal court for violating 28 civil rights, which I believed at the time, of myself and my son, he got the case dismissed, saying the judge is immune, even though corrupt. And so that's what people don't realize, is that when any of these people do get put in the, you know, the spotlight and prosecuted, it's likely, very likely and almost certainly, not for what they're actually charged with, but because of something else that was going on under the covers.
Sure.
And, they didn't go along with the program, and so there need to be a sacrificial lamb, and, you know, send him to jail for 4 years. I'm sure he was in a country club jail, you know. I'm sure he had cable vision. He probably had lobster for dinner and all the rest of it. But, you know, this was his quote-unquote punishment.
Right. And I believe that he helped to get cheap labor for certain industries. And, you know, how can you be sorry that you have done so much destruction towards your fellow citizens in your country? How can you reverse what you've done? I mean, the things that happen as a result of his lobbying efforts can't be undone. No amount of jail time is going to undo the economic disadvantages that he has put on other people.
Okay, can you remind us, because I don't even remember, what was he actually charged with?
Let's see. I'll bring up his notes, but let me talk about somebody else. Rod Blagojevich,
yeah.
who was an individual who on December, let's see, it was December 8th or 7th of 08, I believe. He said he was at the Republic Windows and Doors Industry Corporation in the Chicago area. The Bank of America had just gotten a big, huge bailout. Big, huge bailout. And yet they would not give a loan or extend credit to the Republic Doors and Windows Corporation. And they had like 275 employees, and they were going to have to lay them off before Christmas. And so he got on the air. He gave a press conference, and he basically said, okay, the state of Illinois is no longer going to be doing business with the Bank of America. The very, very next morning, the cops show up at his house early, I think it was 6 a.m., 7 a.m., and took him into custody.
Right.
And it was for what he said about the Bank of America, not what he said in some telephone calls, not what he said about you know, selling the Obama's Senate seat. It had nothing whatsoever to do with that, because that's how politics operates. It you know, that was just insignificant. The big
exactly.
deal. The big deal.
I just want to say, because as I watch this whole thing unfold, I'm saying to myself, what Blagojevich allegedly did as far as trying to get money for, you know, promoting somebody for Obama's Senate seat, this happens every day. All of these minions do the same thing. So you know there's an undercurrent, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. And now you have revealed it. It was him talking against Bank of America. And let me just say, one of my listeners sent me photographs. The Bank of America Center in Charlotte has murals that are very similar to those in the Denver airport. All this kind of genocidal stuff. And so, you know, that let me know that Bank of America is a chosen bank. And so I just want to mention that. But, yeah, it's very clear. The ones that they go after not for the actual reason they claim they're going after them, but because of something else that's transpired below the radar, and now you just revealed it. So,
yes. And he got 14 years. 14 years for mm-hmm. making that statement. And so that is kind of overkill.
Yeah. And we'll see if he ever gets out. We'll see if somebody doesn't knock him off when he's in prison, because I'm sure
exactly.
he has a tale to tell. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. I mean, there are murderers who get 7 years, but they put him in prison for 14 years because he went against the banks. And you could kind of compare him to other, you know, well, Hitler, look what they did to Hitler. He threw the bankers out, so they destroyed his country.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Jack Abramoff. He handed out between $80 and $100 million to members of Congress in order for them to promote certain legislation to vote a particular way. And yet the congressman who took the bribes didn't get incarcerated. But he did.
And what was his agenda? What was he promoting? Do you know?
He basically was promoting cheap labor. He was promoting. In fact, he was in this racket where he was basically exploiting the casinos that the Native Americans had in a particular state, and he was taking a bunch of money off the top. He also had a restaurant. He had a yacht that he could entertain, you know, the congressman on. And the way that they do that is that they would take them out to lunch, and they would, you know, you can't just write a check out to a congressperson, but you can say, okay, we're going to, to have a fund, a fundraiser, and I'm going to, he could give money to a congressman for, as part of a fund. You know, okay, I'm going to give you $10 million for this fund. And then the congressman could go ahead and use that money for whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, when you have such lax laws about what you can contribute, you can buy all kinds of political power. And it's very interesting that Jack Abramoff, the first company that he went to work for, the first lobbying office he went to work for, was, let me see if I can find these notes, was the father of Bill Gates.
Okay.
And Bill Gates' mother worked for, from what I understand, she worked for IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gates were also really, really big into depopulation. They were eugenists. They were eugenists. And so, Abramoff joined that lobbying firm. That it was a lobbying firm, but it was the father of Bill Gates.
Right.
I find that it was called Preston Gates, Ellis, and Rubellis. And he went to work for them in December 1994. They hired him as a lobbyist. And this was basically Bill Gates' father. And then I think that's really kind of interesting.
Well, exactly. And there's an interview that's gone viral on the Internet of Bill Gates talking at a TED conference in 2010, where he actually talks about vaccines as an excellent method of depopulation. And it's so amazing. And now Bill Gates controls Skype, and I'm sure that's why we have many problems on various shows. But, you know, that's what people have to realize is, who are these people? And, Bill Gates' wife, I would love to get a history on her. I'm sure she's a eugenicist as well. I don't know a lot of details about her. I don't know if you do. But these are the psychopaths controlling the world. And that is why the basic message I want to give people is to face reality. Because people with a conscience cannot even conceive of the evil of those who are controlling our world. Once you get the backbone to do so, then you must do whatever your spirit leads you to do to expose these monsters. Because there's more of us than there are of them. And we can change things. But not if we sit on the couch and wait for, David Wilcox's, group that he doesn't mention, the Galactic Federation, the White Brotherhood. There's so many different scans out there. They're going to save you. No, we have to save ourselves. And that is what I want people to realize. And to be encouraged to know that things are changing. The consciousness is increasing on a daily basis. I get so many emails, I'm sure you do as well. No matter how many disinformers try to infiltrate and call into the shows or whatever the case may be, I'm sure you feel the same energy that I'm feeling, don't you?
Oh, I do. There are more and more people that are believing the truth. And if you teach them the truth, if you inform people about the truth of one thing, it opens their eyes about the truth of other things. And they figure, okay, if the government has lied about so many things, then they've lied about other things, you know. I mean, the government lied about the USS Maine. The government lied about the Lusitania. The government lied about they've concealed the regulation of the public airways in 1927. They lied about the 1929 crash. They lied about Roosevelt and all the communists that he allowed to infiltrate the government. They concealed the fact that they killed about 7 million Americans during the Dust Bowl era. They lied about Pearl Harbor, it being a false flag, and basically provoked by the American government. They lied about, the Nuremberg trials, which was really about developing a world court. They concealed the U.S. concentration death camps in Germany. They lied about the reason for the United Nations. They lied about the Korean War. They lied about the moon landing. They lied about the Bay of Tonkin. They lied about the JFK assassination, the Warren Commission. You know, they create a commission after every event.
Yeah.
You know, they concealed the event about the USS Liberty. They lied about the Vietnam War and about supposedly it was halting communism. They lied about the whole Cold War thing. It was basically to build up militarism in this country and to change us from, change the culture of our country, basically, and it was also to build up Israel as a military entity in the Middle East. They lied about the privatization of numerous public properties. They lied about the dangers of aspartame. They lied about the dangers of fluoride. They've lied about the dangers of vaccinations. Dentists lie about what they're putting in your mouth. If they actually said the word mercury, do you really think that patients would say, oh, yeah, I like more mercury in my mouth, you know?
Yeah.
They lied about the sanctions of Iraq, and now they're lying about Iran. They lied about 9/11. They've lied about the Patriot Act, and because that was actually developed in the 1990s, and they were just waiting for the right time. They lied about the capture of Osama bin Laden, who actually died in December 2001. The 9/11 Commission, that was a big farce. They lie about voting. I mean, that is the biggest farce. I'm not a fan of Gordon Duff, not in the least, but he said, people who take voting seriously are too stupid to vote. That's about the most important thing that he's ever said, and I'm not a fan of Gordon Duff. I believe that he's probably an agent, but he did say that, and I thought that was kind of funny. People who take voting seriously are too stupid to vote.
Right.
I mean, you have to admit, that's kind of funny.
Well, just the whole Electoral College thing. I mean, and that's something we are taught in school. That basically, it's not the individual vote. You have these Electoral College minions, whatever they're called.
Sure.
That they're going to decide which one of the puppets get into office. And now we have the voter scam machines and all the rest of it. I mean, it's just, it's overwhelming. But you still hear, people calling to C-SPAN and they're arguing, Republican, Democrat, all this stuff. I laugh, although it's very sad when
sure.
I hear this stuff. But one thing I just want to mention that's very important in all these lies that you mentioned, the 9/11 thing, that's not going away. And that's something that continues to get, massive internet attention. And they don't seem to be able to stifle that. So I view that as a good thing because people are putting the pieces together. Okay, let's see how this works. Okay, we have these obvious holographic images of planes going into the towers. They melted into the towers. What happened to the real planes? We don't know, but obviously it's not what we're told. And these, box cutter people are being blamed for it. And now we have a complete tyranny on this, country. And I think actually the more they do, at this point, as people are waking up, the more they do is actually bringing us to a point where people are going to say, we're not buying your scam. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you consider, too, that the U.S. incarcerates more people than any other country on earth, you have to, I mean, just behind everything, there is a scam, there is corruption, there is privatization. I mean, even our prisons are privatized, and judges who invest in those corporations send people to jail so that they can make money on their investment. I mean, when you look behind and see how the country is actually being run and what they've done after every major crisis, the Patriot Act is not, we think, oh, Gosh, look at everything that happened after 9/11. But you have to look, go further back. Look at everything that happened after World War I. Look at everything that happened after World War II. Look at everything that happened after the Korean War. Look at everything that happened after the Vietnam War. We go from one major catastrophe to another, and with each one, we lose our freedoms. Each one, we lose our freedoms because of the psychopaths who are directing the entire, everything. They're directing everything.
Well, not only that, but disaster capitalism. I don't remember who coined that term, but, you know, that's a very important term as well. That it's the whole ab ordem novus, whatever that is, order out of chaos. They create the problem, they create the reaction, and they give the solution. And all of it's basically the psychopaths making money off the disasters. That's what people have to realize. If these people are hung for treason, I don't have all the answers. How are we going to get rid of these people? I view a giant prison made out of glass in the desert, let them, live under the sun. Of course, they'll have to be inoculated to get into the prison. And let people, go by them 24/7 and ask them hard questions. But the point is that it's the same master template. Once you can see the master template of the psychopath, because as Tom Sheridan talks about, they don't have, they're not like geniuses by any means. They use the same plan over and over and over again. Once you have the ability to see what they do, then you can basically evaluate everything that's going on. And that's what we have to do.
Oh, absolutely. Wasn't he kind of amazing? He certainly was interesting when I had him on my program. You don't realize that there are so many psychopaths living within your midst, and you don't realize just what kind of influence they have until you look at some of their tactics and what they do. And when you were talking, I was thinking about Benjamin Disraeli and this novel that he wrote. And this, I believe it was in 1869 that he wrote this novel. And basically he says, we're going to run everything. We're going to run all the major corporations, all of the major fields of endeavor. We are going to run it all. And, it's not that they don't tell us what they're going to do to us. I mean, even in the book by Quigley, he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. But people simply don't read enough. They don't read. They're so busy watching TV. They're so busy doing mindless things, going to baseball games and sports activities and things like that they're not educating themselves. They're not feeding their brain. They're feeding, their faces and their everything else, their entertainment schedule or whatever. But they're not feeding their brain. And it's just really important that we educate ourselves, that we tune into programs like yours so that we know what is going on. Because they've told us. They have told us what they're going to do. They've also told us that they are the destroyers. And this is what they do. And if you look at who was behind the atom bomb, who is behind the Manhattan Project, who is behind all of these major destructive things,
Exactly.
Look behind the curtain. You're going to find that they all come from the same ethnic group.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the curtain thing, because I picture the Wizard of Oz. And, in the movie The Wizard of Oz, you go behind the curtain and you see there's just a short minion there, pretending at all the power and stuff. That's what we have to realize. I want to encourage people not to have fear. They are going to kill us, 90% of us. They're on the way to doing so. But not to have fear in that, but to actually laugh at these monsters because they don't have the intelligence to even change their plan. They're doing the same thing over and over and over again. And even though people are being fluoridated, aspartamed, vaccinated, mercurized, all these different things that are being done to destroy the brain, still, we have the ability to detox ourselves and to stand above it and to see the big picture. That's what we have to do. And that's why I brought in the topic of language, because, of course, you know, even the language has been corrupted. When I thought about the word understand, that implies you're underneath them. You're understanding. No, overstand. Overstand the minions. Overstand the psychopaths. Watch what the puppet masters are doing. And these people that are destroying our world, there is no punishment that's great enough for them, in my opinion. I don't believe in the death penalty. Like I said, I want to see them put in a massive glass prison in the desert. But we have to join together, not on a group level, because all groups are infiltrated with provocateurs and infiltrators, etc. But, you know, basically just share information. Have people check things out for themselves. And we're running out of time. I just want to also mention again, Deanna's show on RBN, it's one of the most important shows that you can listen to. Spingola Speaks on RBN.org. I want you to give any information you want to give Deanna. The guests that you have are amazing, and you have educated me, especially on this Holocaust issue, which our friend Reagan had encouraged me to investigate for a long time, but I was like, I don't have time for that. But I made time for it, and I realized that this is a master template. This is huge, because the Holocaust hoax is a very important thing for people to realize, because it's being used by the minions to divert our attention from who the monsters are. Imagine the predators, the psychopaths, calling you an anti-predator, an anti-psychopath. I mean, you know, just transpose those words. If you don't believe they're bull, okay, that's what they're doing. So Hi. Please give your information before we run out of time, and I thank you so much for coming on the show.
All righty. I have a website, spingola.com. That is S is in Sam, P is in Paul, INGOLA, spingola.com. You can see my radio schedule there. My first book is called The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation. My second book is about to come out, and it is called The Ruling Elite, the Zionist Seizure of World Power. And anyway, thank you so much for having me on your program, Dr. Carly.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And people, please share this archive with your friends. Get them up to speed as to what's going on. This is not about fear. This is about overstanding the psychopaths. Once we do so in massive numbers, the party's over. These minions have nowhere to go. Okay, thank you so much. Sending you a big hug, Deanna. Keep up the good work. And we'll be back next week, folks. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye.